Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Should you have the right, do you have the right, in the state of Maryland or anywhere else, we'll cover all that ground in the course of this hour, to photograph the police in their work, to photograph an arrest, to photograph an interaction that you have with the police, or to photograph an interaction they're having with someone else? This has been something that we have a law about in Maryland, which the reading on that law is seen differently by our guests this hour. And it also has come to light now because Anthony Graber was riding his motorcycle and recording his experience on this helmet-mounted camera that he had. And he was riding recklessly, speeding, way beyond the speed limit, and then was on an exit. A state trooper in a plain car, perhaps his car, we'll find out in a minute, cut him off, came out of his car with his gun drawn, put it back in his holster. And the whole interaction was videotaped by this Anthony Graber, who then posted it on the web. And then the state police raided his house. I think it was the state police. I don't know if it was the Harford County Police or state police. We'll get that clear. Raided his house. He now faces felony charges under the wiretapping statute. And the prosecutors in the case sought $15,000 bond for the crime. And he could be facing, if I think I have this right, 15 years in prison. The ACLU took up that case. And so it's a huge question, and many of you are interested in that question. We want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. We are joined by Joe Cassley. He's been on the show a while, but he's back with us again. Joseph Cassley is the Harford County State's Attorney who brought the charges against Anthony Graber, though I know that Joe cannot talk about the case itself going to trial, but we can talk about the broader issue and the constitutional issues and the legal issues involved. And Joe, welcome. Good to have you back with us once again.
Hey, Mark, good to talk to you again.
David Rocha is in the studio, a staff attorney for the ACLU of Maryland and providing legal counsel for the motorcyclist Anthony Graber. Of course, you probably can't talk about the case in specifics either, but good to see you in the room, David.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark.
And Mark Graber, no relation to the...
No relation.
No relation to the motorcycle. I just realized you have this nice set of names. It just hit me. It's professor of law and government at the University of Maryland School of Law. Mark, good to have you back.
Good to be here.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. We did contact the Maryland State Police. They gave us a statement that we'll read on the air right now from Greg Shipley, their spokesman. On May 25th, he sent this to us. The traffic stop of Anthony Graber III was conducted by a uniformed trooper in a marked car and a trooper in plain clothes, both of whom had witnessed numerous traffic violations as Graber drove his motorcycle north on Interstate 95. The motorcyclist, who had a video and audio recording device affixed to his helmet, told the trooper he was not being taped. He was issued a traffic citation for violations witnessed by the troopers and allowed to proceed. The subsequent YouTube video of this incident indicated to Maryland State Police that other violations may have occurred. The additional evidence was reviewed with the Harford County State's Attorney's Office. Advice regarding additional charges was provided to the Maryland State Police by that office, and the charges were filed. In addition, a Harford County grand jury reviewed this case and issued indictments for reckless driving, negligent driving, driving a vehicle in excess of reasonably and prudent speed, committing a violation for the purpose of filming, two counts of interception of communication, and one count of possession of an interception device. This case is pending trial, and for the comment at this time, is inappropriate. And I said from Greg Shipley, spokesperson for the Maryland State Police, May 25th, 2010. So the question is it constitutionally acceptable to tape a police officer interaction with you or with anyone else? Let me start with Joe Cassley.
Well, and let me clarify, too,
please,
that there's nothing in the wiretap statute that specifically deals with video, taping a video portion of any sort of interaction, okay? So we're not talking at all under any circumstance about a videotape. We're also not talking about, and this I'm speaking generally as to the law, not as to the specifics of this case, but we're also not talking about, you know, public, but recording of public interactions, okay? So if there's a crowd of people, if there's a group of people, and you're recording, you know, there's nothing about that could be understood to be part of a private conversation. In Maryland, an oral interception of a an oral conversation is prohibited unless both parties consent to the interception. You get into what is a private or what is an oral conversation, oral intercept, and it talks about a conversation that is a private conversation between two persons or persons. And a person is described as not only a private individual, but also an agent of the state. So a police officer is covered under this as the same as a private citizen, in my interpretation of the statute. And therefore, that if you're in a conversation with a police officer, you need to get the police officer's permission to continue the taping, the audio recording, the same as you would, that he would, to record a conversation with you without your knowledge. I guess my interpretation here is somewhat driven by the fact that the legislature, having passed this, has several times come out and specifically passed changes to this statute, specifically governing traffic stops. So obviously the legislature considers traffic stops to be private conversations, because they then, subsequent to passing the law, came out and passed specific exceptions which would allow taping under those circumstances.
And Dave Roca, clearly if ACLU took up the case, you have a different interpretation of this law.
Yeah, I have to say, it's not even a question of interpretation. This is a flagrant misuse and abuse of the law. The law was obviously written to protect citizens from police and to protect citizens' privacy.
Why do you say that?
Well, because the origins of Maryland's wiretap law, just like the federal wiretap law, come from government recording of citizens' conversations and the invasion of privacy that entails, and Supreme Court decisions which prohibited the government from doing that without a warrant. And the federal government, the Congress then passed the Federal Wiretap Act, and the states, some states were ahead, some states followed, in creating state statutes that provided at least the same, if not more, protection. And Maryland's statute is actually more protective. The reason that we're even having this discussion is because Maryland is one of the 12 states that has a two-party consent provision with respect to interception of communications, as opposed to the majority of states, which are a one-party consent provision, meaning that if one party to a conversation is okay with taping it, they can tape it, and it doesn't matter that the other party knew or didn't know, consented or didn't consent. So Maryland is more protective of privacy, but to use this statute, which is intended to protect citizens' privacy, as a sword by the police to intimidate and prosecute citizens who document what public officials are doing is beyond outrageous. And to see how outrageous it is, think about what Mr. Cassilly would be doing if, rather than the situation we have involving Mr. Graber, we had a situation where a private citizen had leapt out of a car on a public street brandishing a gun and carjacked somebody shouting at them, and someone happened to tape that on their cell phone. I guarantee you that Mr. Cassilly would not be prosecuting the citizen who taped that person jumping out of the car with the gun and accosting the person and carjacking them. Mr. Cassilly would be prosecuting the carjacker and would be using that citizen's evidence, that citizen's tape as evidence. And the reason he could do that, and the reason a court, I guarantee you, would let him do that, is because what you say and do on a public street that anyone can overhear, you don't have any expectation of privacy in. And when Mr. Cassilly described the Maryland statute, what he said was that it prohibits taping a conversation unless both people consent. But what Mr. Cassilly failed to emphasize, and what the statute makes crystal clear, is that the prohibition on taping an oral communication applies only when there is a reasonable expectation of privacy. That is, the statute itself defines an oral communication as any conversation or words spoken to or by any person in private conversation. And that those two words, private conversation, from the very inception of the Maryland statute, have been interpreted by the Maryland courts to mean reasonable expectation of privacy. And as Mr. Cassilly knows full well, the things that people say and do in public that anyone can overhear are not the things that they have a reasonable expectation of privacy in. And to use the statute, to interpret the statute as Mr. Cassilly is doing in this case, would mean that any public official who said something embarrassing and was taped doing it would be able to prosecute the citizens who taped them doing that. Remember, in the Virginia gubernatorial race, that macaca moment where the candidate, I'm blanking on his name now, was
Alan.
Right,
Alan. Was taped making that remark. Think about what it would mean to our politics if he could have prosecuted the person who taped him saying it. It's a ludicrous and indefensible position.
Well,
and an abuse of the law.
I need to jump in and respond here. I mean, first of all, politicians who make statements in public don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy.
And nor do state troopers who are performing their job in public. And let me just point out, in this case,
Joe finishes thought, though.
I'd like a chance to respond.
Sorry.
Okay. First of all, if there are two people standing on the street and they are talking to one another on a public street, even though there may be passers-by, they have a reasonable expectation of privacy. United States versus Katz, which is a 1970s Supreme Court decision, said the government could not place a wiretap on a public phone to record a conversation of someone, even though they chose to use a public phone in a public place.
Right, but that was
because
not
because they had a reasonable expectation of privacy. And two people, and the government could not use, for example, parabolic microphones and aim them at two people sitting walking down a public street to record their conversation on a public street because they would have a reasonable expectation of privacy.
And that was a correct decision.
And it's fine. Two persons, a police officer being a person under the definition of the statute, and another person who are having an encounter on the street and a conversation as part of that encounter can have a private conversation, and it does not, rise to the level of unless it's overheard by third parties who are standing there, and these people know that their conversation is being overheard, have a reasonable expectation of privacy.
So, Mr. Cassilly, do you think that if
very quickly, I just want to get to Mark, who's also a guest on the show, but
would you take the position then that a carjacker who jumps out of his car, gun drawn, and accosts someone in their car and steals their car, and that happens to be captured on video and audio by a passerby, you would take the position that you couldn't use that evidence because the carjacker had a reasonable expectation of privacy in his public act of carjacking someone in broad daylight on the street?
Okay. There's a third party there, and it's in front of other people. Okay.
What does that have to do with anything? I mean, that's not the analysis.
Joe has to be able to finish his thought, and I also want to hear Mark's thoughts.
Let me introduce some complications.
Mark
first,
Raver.
In Katz, the Supreme Court very clearly emphasized that the phone booth was enclosed. So, in fact, whether Katz applies to a conversation I have with my wife when I'm walking to the theater is not 100% clear. What is clear is Maryland, as a matter of law, can say, well, we're going to decide these people have an expectation of privacy. And I take it everybody in this conversation agrees that Maryland can say when Graber and his wife are walking to the theater, you can't just tape it, that they have a reasonable expectation of privacy. The real issue is whether it can be said that a police officer making an arrest has a reasonable expectation of privacy. Now, Maryland can call for statutory purposes, a police officer private, but it may not make the police officer private for constitutional purposes. So to run totally far afield, we have case law in libel that seem to indicate that police officers are public officials, whether or not they're labeled by state as public or private. And the real question is there some reason why a police officer has, in some sense, an interest in keeping the interaction with the person they're arresting a secret? And obviously the reason can't be because we're doing something not quite kosher according to Miranda.
So let me ask a question here, the three of you. And folks, I want you to join us here at 410-319-8888 or log on to our Facebook page, Mark Steiner Show, and Join the conversation there. There are a bunch of people who have written in. We're going to read your comments in just a moment to throw them into the mix here. 410-319-8888. Join in this conversation about whether or not you think by law or by constitutional right, which we'll get to in a moment, that you should have the right to videotape or tape an interaction or an interaction you see with law enforcement. 410-319-8888 is the number here. So the question, though, I want to ask you, just the idea about, does it infringe on the effectiveness of law enforcement to allow citizens to tape interactions with the police? What does it hurt or help or harm if that was to take place? Joe Cassidy first.
Well, I don't think it – I mean, look, as was pointed out, Maryland's in the minority of states here, okay? Maryland's what requires a two-party consent state. And I'm not sure the logic of the legislature in enacting a two-party consent that was done back when the original wiretap statute was passed in like 1978. So many, many states, it's a one-party consent state. Virginia is a one-party consent state. District of Columbia is a one-party consent state, which says that if a citizen who is stopped by the police wants to record that, then the citizen's consent in and of itself is enough to allow the citizen to record that interaction, because the citizen's a party to the conversation. And so it's legal there. And obviously it doesn't seem to impact law enforcement. So I don't think that's the issue there, okay? But I do go back to the fact that, you know, if in fact these encounters are not covered by the statute, then why was it necessary for the Maryland legislature on several occasions to struggle with the fact that they had to carve out exceptions for the police to be able to do recordings of conversations with citizens, including public traffic stops on public streets when there may be other people there. They made it clear that the police have to announce to you and let you know that they're doing a recording as part of an audio recording as part of a video recording, and that they can't do an audio recording unless it's part of a video recording. So these are the kind of things that the legislature has done, which tells me as a prosecutor that they intended this to fall under this type of encounter to fall under the wiretap statute.
David, Mark?
Yeah, let me say a couple of things.
And then we want to leave time for Mark here.
I'll do my best. I'm sorry. As to why the legislature did it, I think it's clear that they did it as a prophylactic measure to ensure that there wouldn't be any ambiguity about the propriety of what the police are doing, and to avoid the potential where a defendant gets off or makes a creative argument and a judge keeps evidence out because of the statute. But Mr. Cassidy still hasn't explained how, by any reasonable stretch of the imagination, a police officer performing his job in public could have a reasonable expectation of privacy. And the fact that the other thing to remember here is that, as Mr. Cassidy pointed out, or I should say as the state police statement pointed out, this stop was conducted by two troopers, one in an unmarked car and one in a marked car. Well, the troopers in the marked cars have audio and video, thanks to the ACLU's Driving While Black litigation against the Maryland State Police. And the audio and video was put into the state police troopers' vehicles to document what they're doing when they're stopping people in the face of these allegations, not just allegations, proof that there was racially discriminatory law enforcement going on. So this is also a tool that is routinely used by police departments, and they do it because it's protective of their officers. It documents what officers are doing, what the offender was doing, and protects them from unfounded allegations, and that's all to the good. And that's the important point here. The video and the audio provide independent and irrefutable proof of what happened, and that's why it's so threatening to the police. Without the audio and the video, what you have is the officer's word against the citizen's word, and since officers come with a sort of built-in bias of credibility, having this independent proof is critical. And think about how many cases there have been where this video evidence has been crucial in documenting very significant governmental misconduct.
Dave, before we turn to Joe again, I promise, Mark, go ahead.
I think reasonable expectation of privacy is the wrong way of thinking about this. I think actually the way you phrased it, Mark, earlier is, what is the police interest in this? Does it help valid law enforcement to keep these secret? And I still haven't heard a good reason, and maybe there is a good reason, I simply haven't heard it. So the difference is very simple. My wife and I have a reasonable expectation of privacy, namely that we're having a private conversation as we walk to the theater, and it's wrong to make it public. Whereas when there's an arrest and there's some contention about what happened, there's no privacy. In fact, somebody says, the police officer, I did give them Miranda warnings, the person arrested, I didn't get Miranda warnings. The only issue is, do we have a tape or don't we have a tape? It's not about privacy. What we need to hear is some legitimate reason why the police have for keeping something secret. So the president can say in some matters, I have a legitimate reason to keep my negotiation, say, with the BP people secret, because, in fact, it will affect public policy if people know what we're talking about. But I take it the president couldn't possibly say, there are people about to offer me bribes. I have an interest in keeping this secret, because if you knew about it, I'd be arrested.
So, Joe Cassidy, you've been a prosecutor for a long time. So talk about the issue that I raised, whether or not this is a detriment to or a help to law enforcement.
I thought I already answered that when I said that, you know, most states that are one-party consent states would allow this, and obviously no one's raised the issue that this is a detriment to law enforcement. I mean, it was the police and the prosecutors who went to the legislature and said, hey, we need to be able to audio and visually record. We need to be able to get audio recording on traffic stops when we use dash cams, because we feel that given the current state of the law, that this interaction could fall under the wiretap statute. So please, you know, give us the exception to allow us to do audio and video recording. So, you know, it's not the police trying to hide anything or the prosecutors trying to hide anything. We're the ones that have had to go to the legislature. I mean, I've sat through more hours in the Maryland State Legislature trying to understand their concept of the wiretap statute than anybody reasonably should have to do. it's a painful process, but they seem very begrudging to open up the wiretap statute in any way, shape, or form to allow audio recordings to be done. This statute just doesn't protect the citizen from interaction with the law enforcement. I mean, the Maryland statute prohibits two people from meeting on the street and one recording the conversation of another. I mean, I've had cases where, you know, someone makes a phone call to threaten someone else, and the person receiving the phone call hits the record button on the answering machine and records the threatening conversation. And the courts have ruled that I can't use that as evidence because it violates the Maryland wiretap law, because it was a, quote, private conversation, even though the one person was a victim of an extortion threat.
Now, do you have something contrary to that, Mark, what you're about to say?
Well, I'm just still puzzled if a basic principle of American constitutional law, maybe it's not Maryland constitutional law, but I doubt it, is that every government action must have a legitimate state purpose. So even if there's no concrete right involved, and we'll shove that aside because there may be concrete constitutional rights involved, the legislature can't simply say, well, there's no purpose for doing this. So if there is no law enforcement benefit to the tape or the wiretap statute, if, as I think is doubtful, police have no particular expectation of privacy, the first principle is, what's the point of the law that enables it to survive constitutional scrutiny?
Well, one of our listeners has written in, and you can write us here on the steinershow.org. You can write to us on our Facebook page, Mark Steiner Show or Mark Steiner Facebook page. Call us here at 410-319-8888 as we discuss and debate with our three guests, Joe Cassidy, Harford County State's Attorney, David Rocco from the ACLU, and Mark Graber, no relation to the man that was arrested, professor at the University of Maryland School of Law, whether or not citizens have a right to tape interactions with law enforcement 410-319-8888. Anika writes in that they don't ask permission for their dash cams to run while they talk to you. So why should there be a requirement of notice for you to tape them? I think Maryland law is a good one. However, there should be an exception, a statute allowing videotaping of any interactions with the police authorities by either authorities or citizens. Additionally, they are pressing a case, this case, to scare people from doing this. I say keep taping them. This issue will get to the highest court if necessary. So the question is, if there's so much ambiguity,
do
we need a law that specifically says you have the right to do this?
I mean, here's the problem, Mark.
Don't have the right to do this.
I have no problem.
David Rocha.
I have no problem with the legislature making a change to the wiretap law in the upcoming session and making clear that citizens have the right to tape the police. But I don't think such an explicit exception is necessary. We're not writing on a blank slate here. The Maryland Attorney General has already opined on this issue and said that in these encounters, citizens have no legitimate expectation of privacy. Well, if the citizen has no legitimate expectation of privacy, how on God's green earth could the state trooper have a legitimate expectation of privacy? Furthermore, among the 12 states that are like Maryland and are two-party consent states, the highest courts in four of those states have considered this precise question of whether people violate those states' wiretap acts when they tape the police, and they have answered uniformly that they do not. And no court has ever, anywhere in the United States, said that citizens do violate their wiretap act when we're talking about states that also have a legitimate expectation of privacy as a component to what makes the taping illegal. So it's not as if this is, you know, there's this, we have this situation where anytime someone takes one position, it's automatically assumed that there's legitimate ambiguity.
We have to take a very brief break, and we'll come back and let Joe Cassidy jump into this conversation, and Mark Graber, because I see you've got you're ready to roll on this one, too. Folks, join us here, 410-319-8888. Should citizens have the right to tape police or not in the state of Maryland? There's a big, huge case pending, and we want to hear your thoughts. And we'll read some more of the emails that have come in. 410-319-8888. Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Hospital for Children, offering primary, specialty, and critical care for all children, from the smallest babies to the biggest teenagers. For more information or to learn about their specialty outpatient locations throughout the state, the number is 1-800-492-5538. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We are talking this hour about whether or not you have a state or national constitutional, federal constitutional right to videotape conversations with the police, police stopping you, or any other event the police are involved in, and is that violating wiretap laws? Should you be liable to go to prison for those acts? There's a case that's pending in Harford County that involves not our guest, but another Mr. Graber, who is driving a motorcycle. One of our guests is Mark Graber, professor of law and government at the University of Maryland School of Law. David Rocha, staff attorney for the ACLU of Maryland, who is providing legal counsel to the motorcyclist Anthony Graber, who taped interaction and posted on YouTube. And we are joined by Joseph Cassidy, who is the Harford County State's Attorney, who is runs the office that brought the indictment against Anthony Graber and had him arrested as well for this crime, and he's going to court, which I'm talking about the case specifically because the two gentlemen here with us are representing either side of the case. We can't try the case here on the air, but we can talk about the larger issues which we're doing at 410-319-8888. And gentlemen, if you would allow me, I'd like to open the phones. The phones are just flooded in with a lot of callers. I'd like to have
Mark, Joe Cassidy, just real quick. I'm sorry, I told your producer that I have a conflict, so I'm going to need to leave in a couple of minutes, okay?
Okay, well, let me get one caller here, and you can respond to that caller, and then you can dash out the door.
All right, thanks.
Bill in Bel Air, you're on the air.
Hi, Bill here. Hi, I tuned in and I heard the conversation, and I immediately thought of the case of the College Park student several months back who was assaulted by the three Prince George's County police officers for no apparent reason other than being in the wrong place at the wrong time when they apparently were very angry for whatever reason. And it just occurs to me that if you hadn't had a citizen out there, would the wherewithal to tape that, whether or not these police officers would have suffered any kind of administrative sanctions whatsoever. And I even wonder if at this point, even with the evidence, which was pretty graphic, if anything even happened with that.
And I, Bill, I appreciate you listening and calling in. And Joe, let me ask you very quickly while we still have you. Suppose in that case it happened in Harford County, how would you have reacted to that case?
Well, I mean, I started out the show saying that, first of all, there's no problem with videotaping things, and there's also no problem with audio taping things where there is no reasonable expectation of privacy or where it's not considered part of a private conversation. I'm limiting this to the idea of a private conversation between two parties.
Well, I'd like to know, how is the conversation between Mr. Graber and the state trooper more private than the interaction between the police captured in the UMCP video?
And since Joan has a few minutes left, let me
yeah, I'd very much like to hear what he has to say about
Joan. Going on in the University of Maryland, there's simply, you know, shouts and yells that are easily overheard by anyone else. I mean, the person with the camera was not a party to the conversation, the verbal expressions that were going on, but was easily overheard.
Well, by your argument, the fact that the person wasn't a party makes it even more of an expectation of privacy.
No, because there's no private conversation going on there. I mean, if you're yelling and screaming loud enough to be overheard some distance away, how can you then argue that that's a private conversation?
Well, and I would say the same thing to you about the trooper captured on the video here. Wasn't he yelling?
Specifically, I'm not going to get into discussion of the facts of the case.
We're not doing that. We can't do that.
It's clear that I'm not going there.
I didn't expect you to go there, Joe. So, Joe, how much time do you have to leave now?
Yeah, I really do.
All right.
Sorry.
Well, we look forward to having you back.
Right, take care.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Joe Cassidy, Harford County State's Attorney.
Alas, he's left because what I'm worried about is there are two senses in which a conversation might be private. One is, we're not screaming, yelling at each other. And in this sense, the conversation that the three of us were having, if it wasn't on the air, would be private. On the other hand, presumably this conversation was initiated by someone saying, I'm a police officer, i.e., I am a public official. And so by definition, when a private person has a conversation with a public official, when the public official announces, I am acting in my capacity as a public official, the police officer doesn't come over and say, oh, hi, Joe, I know you. Do you have tickets to the game? There, the police officer is acting as a private official. When a police officer is acting as a public official, it's a public conversation.
Right. And can I just add one thing to that?
Chris, I really get to the phones here.
Well, that point is an important one. Which is that the criteria for privacy, or the way we define privacy, to the extent we look only at location, that would be an extraordinarily myopic view of privacy. Location is one possible determinant of whether or not we have a reasonable expectation of privacy. And in court cases, it's often a very important and sometimes determinative criteria for whether we say there's a reasonable expectation of privacy. But it isn't and shouldn't be the only one. For example, suppose I'm in my house and I have a video camera on my head, and the police bust in serving a warrant, and I record them doing it. Could the police say that they had a legitimate expectation of privacy in their act of busting into my house and serving a warrant on me if I recorded them? I think that would just – I think to pose the question is to show how absurd it is.
Well, I guess – let's go back to the phones here, but I do want to talk about when does the issue of privacy come into it and how far – I mean, can you have a secret camera recording the police? Does that violate their privacy coming into your home?
I don't think police engaged in the public performance of their duties have a reasonable expectation of privacy.
Mark?
I would be inclined to agree unless we have not reasonable expectation of privacy, but an argument can be made that this, in fact, affects their abilities. So I take it David would have no problems, whether you call it public performance or their duty or not, is three policemen get together and they are chatting. Here is how we're going to try and capture this drug kingpin.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, whether we don't worry about whether that's a public conversation or a private conversation. We simply say, well, recording here will affect police capacity.
Although,
let me come right back to David. Sure. Let me come back to the phones here. 410-319-8888. Russ Cornell, Dean, the next three callers, and we'll read these Facebook comments. Russ, you're on the air in East Baltimore.
Greetings, Mark.
Hi, Russ. Welcome.
Yes. Mark, when I first heard of this situation and the law that they passed in the state of Maryland, a law which is crafted to obviously do one thing that most people would be in agreement with, but has left enough room in places to be turned on its head and become contrary to its very purpose. Our purpose isn't to give up civil liberties. It set the chill down my spine when I heard this story, because sometimes we have to remind ourselves of reality. Hitler came to power in Germany legally, albeit by a slim margin. He did it illegally. And it's laws like these that, when you look ahead for the tough sledding that's economically ahead for this country, that leads to the kind of openings that threaten us all. And I think this case really will find its way to the courts. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you so much. Mark?
Well, I'm not sure this case will find its way all the way up to the Supreme Court, in part because I have a deep suspicion at the end of the day that, one, it will be dropped fairly early, that the real charges are the other charges. The police are very upset about being videotaped, and the prosecutors may simply want the judges to kill it rather than they kill it, because they have ongoing relations to the police. So it will surprise me if this one has legs outside of Maryland.
You think it does?
Well, as I said, in four of the 12 states that are also two-party consent states, this explicit issue of citizens' right to tape the police has come up and been decided by the high courts in those states. And as I said, the result has been in each of those cases that the court said that citizens don't violate the Wiretap Act because the police officers in the public performance of their duty do not have a reasonable expectation of privacy. So I certainly hope that we will get a reported appellate decision in this case that puts this issue to bed, because I do think this is an abuse of the statute, and I think it's ironic at best that Mr. Cassilly is suggesting that we should now amend the statute to make Maryland a one-party consent state, which would be less protective of people's privacy, in essence using his own overreach as a way of weakening privacy protections. That's both ironic and very troubling.
So that makes me wonder if this program itself could be used as part of the court proceedings.
Well, this is a public hopefully this is a public conversation.
It is a public conversation.
Hopefully somebody is listening.
410-319-8888. People are listening. Cornell in Randallstown, you're on the air.
Mark, thank you so much for your show, and thanks for bringing it to EAA.
My pleasure, Cornell. Thank you.
Hey, Mark, A, police, government officials, in the function of public duties, have no privacy. None. Zip. Zero. None. If the government or police and is a public function is serving, no privacy. But on the other side of that, here's what I wanted to say. The private person walking the street, there's a zillion surveillance cameras, ATMs. Everybody's got a surveillance camera. The government, everyone has it. Isn't that violating the privacy of the individual walking down the street? Tell me about that. Let's talk about that for a second.
That is an important question. I mean, how does this work in the reverse? Are constantly being videotaped, whether it's police or security cameras or wherever we are. Why is that not a violation of our civil liberties?
Well, let's talk about the. So we have to disaggregate photography and audio taping. I mean, there isn't. You know, we're having this conversation only because of the wiretap statute and only with respect to audio taping. There is not a statute that even arguably, I mean, I don't even think the wiretapping statute arguably applies, but there is simply no statute that applies in any way, shape, or form whatsoever that says anything in any way, shape, or form whatsoever about photographing police, you, me, videotaping, absent audio taping, et cetera. And the courts have made clear that photography is itself a First Amendment protected activity. Now, I agree. You have to, I think it's important to distinguish, and your caller, I think, made this point. It's a little bit, myopic or simple-minded to not disaggregate between things that citizens do and things that the government does, things that the government does obviously poses a far greater risk of infringing on our privacy rights, our civil rights, of our autonomy, of our independence, than things that private citizens do. Now, that's not to say that non-governmental actors can't also do that. Obviously, corporations are incredibly powerful and can affect our lives in powerful ways. But I, as a private citizen, if I go out into the street and I take pictures of the things I see, I'm not doing anything that endangers anyone's civil rights. However, if the government creates a network of video cameras on every corner and pervasively monitors every citizen every time they walk out their door and tracks them every place they go, that's obviously a far greater intrusion into privacy, precisely because it's the government itself that's then collecting and aggregating this information. So we can't talk about photography in the abstract. We have to talk about who's doing it, to what extent they're doing it, why they're doing it, how they're doing it when we discuss these concepts. So I agree that pervasive video monitoring of the citizenry by the government does raise significant privacy concerns. But I don't extrapolate from that to say that the government should therefore have the power to prohibit me as a private citizen from going out in public and documenting what I see as a documentary filmmaker.
Mark?
Curiously, I'll disagree on privacy grounds. I think as a constitutional matter, people who go out in public, you know, you're out in public, it's called public for a reason. On the other hand, it would strike me as reasonable for government to say, you know what, when people are engaged in the public, but in private business, maybe it's illegal to tape their conversations, even though they have no constitutional right. Not everything government regulates is a matter of constitutional right. Maybe we are being taped too much. And so I would say that people might have a statutory right to privacy, and I would have no objections to saying that when people are simply walking, no, you may not be able to simply shoot pictures of them, use them on advertisements, put them on the web, that people have to do more to bring themselves to public notoriety. I think it's a close question. I think it's a difficult question, particularly given changes in technology since our Constitution was written, since nobody really worried if you went in Central Park in 1789, someone would shoot a photograph of you.
Let me open the phones and come right back there. 410-319-8888. We're debating whether or not you as a citizen should have the right to videotape interactions with law enforcement, whether it involves you directly or not. This is part of the case of Anthony Graber. What created this discussion today is the case of Anthony Graber, who is indicted in Harford County for videotaping on his motorcycle helmet his interaction with a policeman. At least one of those state troopers was in plain clothes, came out of his car without identifying himself, and pulled his gun out, which he reholstered. 410-319-8888. Dean in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good evening, Mark.
Good evening, Dean.
Hi there. I want to present a hypothetical. First of all, let me just say that I think it's ludicrous that a public servant executing his duty in a public place should have any reasonable expectation of privacy. In my hypothetical, the police has pulled over a motorist for an infraction, and the motorist proceeds to deliver a serious beatdown on that officer. Is the officer eager to waive his expectation of privacy? Let's say somebody was videotaping the occurrence. And will the motorist who is committing this beating, will his lawyer be able to suppress videotape of the beating of the officer? That's my hypothetical.
And the answer, as I suggested in the question I posed to Mr. Cassily early on in the show, is that, I guarantee you, I would stake my life that Mr. Cassily would argue that there was no reasonable expectation of privacy and that the video would come into evidence. And I guess I wouldn't stake my life because I don't trust judges with my life for anything, but I would stake a whole lot of money on the outcome being that the court would admit the evidence, because, of course, there wouldn't be a reasonable expectation of privacy, just as the carjacker in my hypothetical would not have a reasonable expectation of privacy.
Go ahead, Mark. Then.
Just to push that, something David said earlier, reasonable expectation of privacy doesn't simply refer to location. It also refers to some kinds of acts. So one never has a reasonable expectation of privacy when one is beating somebody up or murdering them. I don't care where it it takes place in the most private setting imaginable. If I take you down to my basement for the purposes of murdering you, I have no reasonable expectation of privacy.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Dean, thanks for your call. And Stan in Pigtown, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Stan. You're on the air.
Hi, it's Dan from Pigtown.
Dan, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
President of the Washington Village Development Association.
Yep.
We take video cameras out and videotape prostitutes, drug dealers. We put them on YouTube. And there have been times when the police have had the prostitutes pulled up, and they have never objected to being videotaped when they're doing the good things that they do.
Well, and that, I think, points out the problem here because, of course, the Baltimore City Police have also taken the position in their public comments on the Preakness video that it is, in fact, illegal to take police officers. But yet, in practice, when they find it convenient for people to videotape, they're happy to let people do it with impunity. And I think that, again, gets to the point I'm making. This prosecution is not about enforcing the law in some even-handed manner. This is an abusive prosecution aimed at intimidating people from documenting official conduct. That's the effect it's having. That's what it's intended to do. I think you see that clearly from the sequence of events here. Mr. Graber, at the time of the traffic stop, was simply given a ticket for speeding and sent on his way. It was only after the police saw the video on YouTube and saw that it had generated significant negative commentary about the state police that they went and got the warrant with these ridiculous criminal charges.
We talked about photography a minute ago, and before we go to our next caller, Brian in Crofton, Michael Hughes has written in on the show Facebook page, saying, "I was arrested for taking still photos of Baltimore cops arresting people in Charles Village on election night 2008. But thankfully, my arrest was ruled false by the Civilian Review Board. I spoke on your show for those who missed it, and there's a link here, which we'll put on our website, michaelhughes.com/WordPress, where you can read more about it. But that was a case where the revelers were out because Barack Obama won,
mm-hmm.
and they were arresting people
mm-hmm.
By Union Memorial Hospital, and this Michael Hughes was taking pictures of it and was arrested for taking pictures.
Right, and that's precisely when the police want to stop people from taking pictures, when they're doing things that they perhaps shouldn't be doing or don't want documented. And to allow the Wiretap Act to be used as a sword in those circumstances, it's just beyond outrageous. I mean, the ability to document and to make an independent and irrefutable record, not subject to lapses of memory, bias, charges of partisanship, that ability to make an independent record of what public officials do is frankly critical to democracy. And to allow this act, which was intended to protect citizens' rights to privacy, to be a tool, a sword of the police to now suppress citizens' ability to document what the public officials are doing, it's turning the law upside down. I'm left almost speechless. It's just staggering to me that this is happening. And, you know, nowhere has any public official been able to articulate how or why it is that they should have some expectation of privacy in their public official acts. They're just simply unable to do that.
Mark, do you have a...
Just to elaborate on that actually a little bit, it turns out, not simply for democracy, but for what we'll call constitutional criminal procedure, that most of the litigation over cases like Miranda, Fifth Amendment rights, exclusionary rule, Fourth Amendment rights, people agree on the contours of the law. The real question is, did the police actually give the Miranda right warning? Did they say it clearly? Was the contraband actually visible? And in this case, taping, audio tapes, videotapes actually would help the court. Rather than have to figure out who's telling the truth, you go to the videotape. The problem is over. So it's not simply that videotaping crucial for democracy. It's crucial for the operation of constitutional criminal procedure to the point where some scholars have suggested that as a solution for Miranda, simply have a rule, all official interrogations will be taped.
410-319-8888. Brian in Crofton, you're on the air.
Evening, gentlemen. How are you tonight?
Well, welcome.
My question is this. In many jurisdictions, I don't know about Maryland, but it's typical for the police to use
dash cameras to record their interaction with, say, drunk drivers or, you know, anybody, any citizenry. So how come that is that? Is that okay, yet the citizen then cannot tape the same, you know, interaction between the police and themselves?
Now, David, very quickly, I mean, that was a law that was enacted in large part because of the ACLU lawsuit we talked about.
Well, not the law. Joseph Cassidy referred to this. There is a specific exception in the Wiretap Act that allows the dash cams, with although it places some restrictions. It's interesting to note that, of course, the police didn't do what they're supposed to do in this particular case, which is warn Graber that he was being taped, which is ironic. But the more – and they are common in Maryland, but the – it's important to point out that when the Attorney General, the question that the Maryland Attorney General was asked in 2000, the statutory exception for the dash cams was already in place then. The question wasn't whether, you know, are the dash cams in compliance with the statutory exception? They obviously are. The question was, what happens when the dash cams pick up some other conversation, not the person that the police officer is arresting? Or suppose the police officer, as the question put it, activates the dash cam accidentally and doesn't give the warning. Has the police officer then violated the Wiretap Act? So what the question that the AG was answering was not about the specific statutory exemption, but about police taping people with their dash cams in derogation of the statutory exception. And that's where the state AG said in 2000 that there's no legitimate expectation of privacy in these police-citizen interactions. And I think that was the right conclusion.
Mark, we have just a minute left here.
Okay, well, remember that police are different from the rest of us. They're public officials. They have rights and duties the rest of us don't have. So to simply say, well, if the police can do it, other people can do it, is wrong. In this case, it may be that citizens have more of a right than police officers, because if David and I are correct, police officers have no reasonable expectation of privacy when they're acting as police officers, whereas citizens do have a reasonable expectation of privacy.
And I want to thank all of our guests for being here tonight. Mark Graber.
Thank you, Mark.
Good to have you again. David Rolfe, great to see you. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we appreciate Joe Cassidy joining us for the first 35 minutes of the program. You can keep talking on Facebook and let us know what you think and have the interaction with one another, like people are writing about this all over our Facebook page. So please continue doing that. Listen to the Mark Steiner Show on WEAA Baltimore. And the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. And when we return from this break, we will go to Theater Baltimore and learn about what's happening at Everyman Theater and have a fascinating conversation with Leon Fleischer and Catherine Fleischer about pianos and saving animals. Stay with us.